Romans chapter 12, verse 18 reads, "If it is possible, as far as it depends upon you, live at peace with everyone." Let that sink in for a little while. Is it really possible to live at peace with everyone? There are some real problems in this broken and many times stone cold, cutthroat, dog eat dog world. And when we're armed to the teeth, even a parking lot across the street is not safe. So you better be careful. People will take advantage of you, especially if they see you're vulnerable. You can't be everybody's best friend. And if you're hit, well, you need to hit back. Or you run the risk of getting hit a second time. Living at peace with everyone? Really? It's a crazy kind of logic. I would love to live at peace with everyone. It's just that everyone doesn't want to live at peace with me. For 23 years, on every April Fool's Day, comedian Alex Feldman has put on a court jester's hat and walked around the streets of Boston with a bag of cash, $1 bills, a few $5 bills, some $10 bills, and passes out the cash to strangers. It started as kind of a lark when he was doing street performances in the 1990s at Faneuil Hall or Harvard Square. He would be doing his act, and one day he decided, instead of people giving me money, I won't count what's in the tip jar, and at the end of my set, I'll just go around with money and give it to people randomly and see how that works out. You know, comedians are always looking for new material. Or maybe they just have a whole lot of time on their hands. But he said it was a way to create real drama at a very low cost. And so now this practice, every April Fool's Day, bag of cash, going around to strangers in Boston and passing out money. How do you think that turned out for him, or turns out for him in the midst of that? Are people lined up? Can't wait to see what surprise they may get out of the bag? Not even close. Well over 90% of the people totally rebuff him. Some shield their children away from him. Others get a little more aggressive and say, "Get out of my face." Well, that's not an exact quote. They are in Boston, by the way. And he is received with such suspicion. He continues to do this, he said, because we live in this world where people can't be bothered to lift their heads from the screens of their phones in order to have a real human encounter. And so he persists. Every April Fool's Day, and people ask, some that will engage him in conversation, "Why are you doing this?" And he says, "Well, it's April Fool's Day, and I'm a fool, and I'm giving away my money." And according to the Boston Globe reporter that put this story out there in 2015, by the end of the day, after 3 hours of following him around, there's a little group that kind of notices what's happening, and they want to see what's happening with him as he moves from the Red Line to the Orange Line and from Harvard Square to downtown Boston. And there's this little group that just watches this whole thing unfold. One of his followers was Rose Wang. She was a recent graduate of the Harvard School for Psychology. And she said to comedian Feldman, "You're doing it all wrong. People are intimidated by you. I bet if I tried, I would have a greater success rate. They don't need a stranger with a big funny hat coming, especially on April Fool's Day, thinking that you've got a prank up your sleeve. If they take money from you, I will be more successful. And so he gave her his bag of cash, and she went around to the subway trying to give money out to people. They treated her more like she was asking for money than giving money away. And after 20 or so tries, she did have one person that took $1. And she came back and sat at Feldman's seat next to him and said, "This is really perplexing. The people looked at me as if I was crazy." And she missed the next stop of hers in order just to keep observing and watching. As far as it is possible, as much as it depends upon you, be at peace with everyone. It's in that context that I'm interested in the story of the wheat and the weeds. In the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 11 and 12, we're learning about this growing conflict surrounding the ministry of Jesus. While successful and growing in popularity, his ministry is also mysterious, filled with misunderstandings and question by everyone, from John the Baptist to the disciples to Jesus' own family, and especially by the religious leaders whose authority was particularly called into question by Jesus' ability to transcend tradition, all in order to offer wholeness and healing to a whole segment of hurting and forgotten humanity. Where the community saw a cursed indictment for blame and guilt, Jesus saw an opportunity for grace and inclusion. Where the community took advantage of the weak and the injured, Jesus saw an invitation to declare salvation and the promise of renewal. Where the community closed down access for the stranger and the outcast, Jesus saw the possibility of a reconciled humanity where each person is celebrated as a child of God. The only persons Jesus seems to have little time for are those who play it safe, who surrender to convention, especially those in religious authority who are so intent to protect the status quo that they end up stomping upon the poor, the injured, and the marginalized, keeping them oppressed and forgotten, declaring them insignificant. Jesus' advocacy for everyday folks and his power to restore their physical problems with a greater and more lasting dignity and integrity fueled a large following. So large that he begins to teach from a boat to keep the crowds at bay. So many needed him to do their bidding. So many wanted him to be the great miracle worker. But Jesus is more. Jesus doesn't come in his ministry to be a magician. He's not performing parlor tricks. He's not a bread king. He's certainly not a man with free cash to hang out and hand out to others. No. He is a moral teacher of the highest order. So in chapter 13, he starts telling parables. Parables that are so rich and so astute that Matthew's Jesus seems intent on having to spell them all out. But there's a part of me, a big part of me, that just wants the parable to sit there in our imagination a little bit longer before we get too quick with an interpretation. The narrative seems to suggest the disciples are looking for easier and clearer answers and directions. But this much I can tell you, the spiritual instructions of the parables will not make for a very good book on gardening. Those of you that have had gardening experience, what do you think about this as the manual for taking and tending your garden? Well, when you seed, just throw the seed everywhere. Don't worry about the soil. Don't take a soil sample. Just toss it out there and let it fall where it's going to fall. Don't worry about how it's going to be planted or received. Just offer it without restriction. It's up to nature anyway, not you. And when you're tending your garden, well, just stop. Stop tending the garden. Don't worry about the weeds. Just let them take over alongside the good crop you are hoping to harvest. Be patient. Do nothing. Wait. It'll all get worked out in the end. Now, when I was a child, my parents may have accused me of tending a garden that way. But it doesn't make good sense. And perhaps what Jesus is talking about all along is not gardening. There's far better manuals on how to tend a garden. No, what Jesus is talking about is the contract of social interaction that exists between you and me and our neighbors. You see, human beings are far more complicated than wheat and weeds and soil and seed. We might be able to predict what is what and judge between the pleasant and the pesky in the fields of biology, but we're not so talented in the fields of psychology or sociology or theology. In human community, you cannot easily tell the wheat from the weeds. And it's possible, if not likely, that you can do far more harm trying to uproot the evil around you in pursuit of goodness, even when you thought your aim was true and your intentions were noble. The story of the wheat and the tares, or the wheat and the weeds, is a warning. A warning to the moral crusader. Who made you judge and jury over your neighbor? But it is also an inspiration to the moral loser who has tried and failed, or whose good works became choked off by trouble and feel like they need to give up. It's not too late, Jesus says. Harvest has yet to come. All things haven't been determined yet. You see, we must love as an action that is both given and received in order for it to take hold. Both are necessary for completion. But love's poor reception in the world should not discourage the children of light from their need to share it. Our duty, it's not to determine how our acts of charity will be taken or whether our efforts will grow in popularity. God's grace, God's extravagant, infinite, abundant grace is to be lived and shared by those who practice it with the same unconditional reservations with which they first received it. When you see the whole world as nothing but one big threat, and we become incapable of recognizing the common decency as another to be made in the image of God, well, then the cause of evil has already been successful and has already won over the world. Evil is real. Jesus is not ducking hard questions. And appropriate skepticism is healthy. We are to be as wise as a serpent and as innocent as a dove. But here's the question for us in the 21st century. Has a healthy dose of skepticism now been overrun by a all-pervasive and debilitating cynicism? There's no purpose in even trying. It's a good question. And something for us who live in the religious community should take to heart. Well, there was a small percentage of Bostonians who accepted the gift. Accepted it joyously, whether it was $1 or $5 or $10. And for that very small minority of folks who actually received the free gift that was offered to them, they noticed something that became a trend. Something that happened in the lives of these individuals that was duplicated, whether they were in the subway or they were out in the street with all kinds of different folks of different gender, different races. Just there was a trend, it seemed. Those who received the money made a pledge. I'm going to pass this along. I'm going to take this dollar. I'm going to give it to someone else. They perhaps gave it to a homeless person, though that wasn't the point of the social experiment. But one person yelled from the orange line, "It may just be a dollar, but it's brought me such joy. I'm going to pass this joy along the rest of my day." If it's possible. As much as it depends upon you, live at peace with everybody.